Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, I'm Ryan Tannehill, quarterback for the Miami Dolphins, and I represent the Finsider with the PH.
Man, has that guy taken a beating this week? Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Finsider Radio. My name is Keith. I'll be your host for the next hour and 15 minutes or so. A lot to get to tonight. Most of it unpleasant, as we've grown accustomed to here on the show. I'm just going to go ahead and dive right into it by bringing on my usual co-host, Lewis, who has turned into apathetic Lewis the past couple of weeks, as opposed to his usual angry form. And I can hardly blame him, given what's transpired with this team as of late. Well, really, this season, when you think about it. What's going on, Lewis?
Not much, man. Just got finished working, playing some guitar at my church, so I'm ready to talk some Dolphins football. However, I would like to make this statement in advance. If you ask me anything about Tannehill or quarterbacks, I will promptly ignore you, so don't even bother.
Okay. For all of you listening at home, that means if you want to talk about quarterbacks or Tannehill, check Lewis's timeline, because all of your answers are probably in there at some point. Unfortunately for you, Lewis, we are going to talk about Ryan Tannehill, but as you could probably assume, I'm not going to beat him up on this show. I don't think that one throw at the end of that game should overshadow what he did on Monday night, especially when you think about the small club of quarterbacks who can make that throw that he tried to complete on the run. I've seen a lot of quarterbacks overthrow that. Eli in Super Bowl 42 comes to mind. I think he overthrew Plaxico Burress, which is a hard thing to do. And, had they lost that game, that would have been the play that everyone came back to. Of course, they won the game, so nobody really talks about it. Different story with the Dolphins in Miami on Monday night. A chance to extend that drive, and he overthrows them. While a lot of people thought he should have just scrambled for the first down, which, I mean, is, in hindsight, makes a lot of sense. But we can't let that ending overshadow the stuff he, I mean, like, he, I thought for the majority of Monday night, I thought he looked great, considering the fact that his protection wasn't very good. He had Jason Pierre-Paul up his ass the entire night with that club, that monstrosity of a club that guy was swinging around, which was frightening unto itself. But, I mean, the play calling in the first half I thought was excellent. You know, they switched up a lot of their looks. There was some stuff I really could have done without, but that didn't happen too often. They switched up their attack. I mean, Lamar Miller was just getting yards whenever he wanted. I mean, it looked like he could just take what he wanted from the New York Giants. I mean, that defense has been very good. He should be able to do that, and he did. They switched things up. I don't know if I really understand the need to throw Jarvis Landry the ball 40 times. I know it was a big night for him. He wants to, you know, he's going against his college teammate, his good friend. He wants to make a splash himself. And you could tell, like, Jarvis was banged up in that game, and it looked like he was just doing too much. I mean, like, he didn't look calm. On all his punt returns, he had that DeSean Jackson look where, you know, he just wants to do something so bad that you're just thinking, you know, please just catch the ball first and worry about that later, and don't do anything too stupid. So there's a lot of – anyway, all that rambling is to say that Ryan Tannehill did a lot of good things. That throw to Kenny Stills was a dime. And of course, people on Twitter immediately start saying, well, that's not a real deep ball. That's BS. Yes, that is a deep ball, and that was right on the money against a very poor secondary. I mean, that's the stuff that you should be able to get. He got it. It was a great throw. He ran the read option like a champ. But a lot of people overlooked the fact that in the second half, the play calling got really bad and complacent. And complacent in the sense that just same old, just leaning too much on throwing the football. Yeah, like I mentioned, Lamar Miller was just getting whatever he wanted on the ground against New York. Why are you backing that off, especially in the second half against a team that doesn't usually play in warm weather? And the defense isn't very good anyway, so you can bet that they're probably going to wear down and see some fatigue in that second half. And you got Lamar, who looks fresh as all get out. I mentioned on Twitter, probably because he's carried the ball about 30 times this season going into that game. So, I mean, Lamar looks good. Ajayi, he was even looking strong against New York's front. And then Miami just backs away from it. How many times did Lamar carry the ball in the second half? Was it 6 times?
I honestly don't remember exactly. I, like, truth be told, Keith, I didn't get to watch the entirety of the game. I was actually on an errand, but what I did see, there was very little running of the football. And when I saw Lamar Miller's stats again, I was just thinking to myself, "Oh no, who needs to get fired this time in order for the Dolphins to run the football?" And I don't. I guess I don't know what it is. I guess maybe there just really aren't that many runs in Bill Lazor's playbook. Maybe it really is just like 99.9% passing plays, and then you just have this kind of one run for Lamar Miller to play just for the sake of saying we have a running play. I don't know anymore.
Well, what's the excuse for Zach Taylor here? Because, I mean, he called
Sure.
a brilliant first half. I mean, and it's not like he's going against a champ defense here, but, I mean, he kept them guessing. He kept them completely off balance throughout the first half, worked the offense to Ryan Tannehill's strength, and lo and behold, he's allowed to audible, and Ryan Tannehill did some really impressive stuff with those audibles. I think one of them was that long touchdown to Stills, or one of his big throws. I've already
Yes,
put that game out of my
that was
mind.
the audible. That was the audible.
Cool.
Yeah, that was why it was a big
So,
deal.
yeah, it should be a big deal because, I mean, they went from taking the game completely out of his hands to all of a sudden, go ahead and just go for it. And he looks great. He looked comfortable doing it. And these people have this absurd notion that Tannehill is some kind of idiot who can't run the offense. The guy is incredibly intelligent. I don't think he's going to have a problem running that offense. And another thing that, I mean, like, if you really want a whipping boy for what happened Monday, I mean, I've supported Dallas Thomas. I feel like I gave him a fair shake. He had a lot of switching around, didn't have any common ground to find coming into this league because he was flipped around all the time. And I thought that, maybe some familiarity and consistency in terms of snaps at left guard would do him well. And he was just a penalty machine in that game when he wasn't just getting thrown around. That one spin move that he gave up too was an absolute disaster. The guy just got pounded. I mean, so that experiment I think should be considered officially concluded at this point. It was bad. The offensive line continues to underwhelm. You feel bad for Jason Fox, but that guy just got flat worked over on the right side all night. And I so desperately want to see Jerwan James get back in there. I mean, it's a common theme that you have all these underachieving elements going on in this game. You have all these faults. The secondary in that game was as bad as I've seen from an NFL secondary this year. Speaking of being able to get whatever you want, that secondary allowed Odell Beckham to pretty much turn that game into his own personal highlight show, which I'm sure had to kill Jarvis because Jarvis really wanted to get out there and make a statement. It's too bad he wasn't going against Miami's secondary. He would have been able to do that. You had him there cheating in, like clearly didn't understand their assignments at points. Jumped on routes that I just could not understand. One of them resulted in that, I think it was an 84-yard score for Odell Beckham Jr. as the second of the night. He just ran amok on those guys. And that's the one guy you can properly game plan for and know that he is going to get his. Like, in terms of looks from Eli Manning, Odell Beckham is going to get the ball. Game plan for that. Instead, they just got absolutely beaten up by the guy. So, The question now is, because people are starting to realize, finally, that this season is an absolute atrocity and should be taken out back and shot and just forgotten forever. But you've got several areas you need to address here. The linebackers that night, Jelani Jenkins had some decent plays, but we had the play you love where Kelvin Shepherd bounces off of a ball carrier. Even when he comes in hot.
Again.
Yeah, it happens every game. The linebackers are atrocious. They are bad. I like Jelani Jenkins. I think Misi is cool from a depth standpoint. But in terms of guys back there who are leaders, instinctual, just, you know, full-blooded defenders who belong at the second level of defense, I don't see those guys wearing aqua and orange right now. I don't see it. And the memo's out because that level of defense was just abused the other night. And, I mean, really did the defensive line a disservice because there was times in that game before they had Ndamukong Suh on the field literally every down because they couldn't afford to take him out of there that, I mean, the defensive line was just having its way. Because, I mean, New York's offensive line is terrible. They've got a lot of injuries up there. They've got some guys who are going to end up being pretty good. I think Eric Flowers, he got hurt. He hurt his ankle. Jordan Pugh is a really good player. Jordan or Justin Pugh, I can never remember his first name. They've got some good players. Weston Richburg is a good player. But, I mean, as a cohesive whole, not a very good offensive line. They hemorrhage a lot of pressure. And you saw that early in that game. I mean, Miami was just all over those guys. And all of a sudden, it's like they started to fatigue. And you're all of a sudden, it's a hat on a hat for these linebackers. And Miami's linebackers don't play downhill anyway. You always hear about you want your second tier of defense to play with a downhill mentality when they're pursuing the football. You just don't see that with these guys. Everything is just so reactive, but in a late sense, there's a lack of physicality. Cohen Misi had a couple of really good plays. Jelani Jenkins had a couple of really good plays. But outside of that, it was the second and third levels of defense on Monday night, which was absolutely abysmal. And I hope I never see the Dolphins play that way ever again, which, I mean, I'm sure they will this coming up week. So here's my question to you, though. What level, because, I mean, these guys are going to have a high draft pick. I will be shocked if they win another game. They shouldn't have beaten Baltimore, frankly. They did themselves a disservice by winning that game, in my opinion. What level or what area needs to be addressed the most? Because there are several areas of need, areas of severe issue here. What do you think?
Are you referring to the roster or just in general?
Position groups. So technically the roster. It depends how specific you want to get with it.
Then I maintain, if we're talking just roster, then I maintain what I've been saying for the past few weeks. Linebacker needs to be fixed quick, fast, and in a hurry. Get Miles Jack, get Jalen Smith, I don't care. Get somebody to take over for Shepard, somebody who can help the corners, help the D-line, help everybody. And Ndamukong Suh was supposed to make everybody better. I mean, yes, he can, but only to a certain extent because he works in one specific area. Middle linebacker works everywhere. And he has to be the captain of the defense. Like, when I interviewed Rashad Jones, he said he was the captain of the defense. Well, yeah, that's because Louis Delmas isn't there anymore. And even if Delmas was there, it really shouldn't be Delmas' responsibility. For all intents and purposes, when you think of captain of the defense, you usually think middle linebacker. Kelvin Shepherd cannot be the captain of the defense because Kelvin Shepherd is not a good enough linebacker, and he probably doesn't even know what he's doing half the time anyway. And bouncing, and you cannot have your captain of the defense bouncing off of wide receivers who are almost twice as small as he is. That's unacceptable. So I still maintain the linebackers needs to be top priority.
Well, going through the first topping shame mock draft came out today because it's, you know, mid-December, and that's when his mocks debut for the upcoming offseason. And I'm just looking at it right now. I know that Kevin had a post up earlier today talking about it. I didn't get a chance to look at it because I was tied up at work all day. I was making just comments about it. I mean, it would be cool if Ronnie Stanley was drafted by the Dolphins, but considering the other areas of need, I just don't know if I can sign on for that full. I mean,
what is
offensive
Ronnie
line,
Stanley?
Offensive line is one area that's a disgrace, but the linebackers especially really need to be addressed here. And at number 8 overall, he's got him going with the Fighting Irish tackle. So that kind of blew up in my face a little bit. I did not see that one coming. Unfortunately, he has Jalen Smith going to the Cowboys. That's going to piss me off if something like that happens. The Cowboys come in with this team that's supposed to compete for the NFC. Tony Romo gets hurt. So it's almost like that Houston Texans year where, I mean, they just absolutely fell apart. And then all of a sudden they land an incredibly high draft pick as a result. The Cowboys should not get Jalen Smith. They shouldn't be allowed to draft him. So,
and don't they already have, like, well, we can always pick up Rolando McClain.
Yeah. Oh, Rolando McClain. So much promise when he came out of Alabama. You know, just a real big, rangy linebacker, could pretty much do it all. And unfortunately, just a mess in terms of the whole mental aspect. So the good news is, well, I guess good news, depending on how you look at it. Paxton Lynch, he has going second to the Cleveland Browns, which I've seen a lot of Paxton Lynch talk for the Dolphins on Twitter. I don't get that. Paxton Lynch is just going to come in and get his ass beat just like Ryan Tannehill in terms of, you know, if he's back there taking snaps. I don't know why people think that you flip one for another and Paxton Lynch is going to come in and play like Aaron Rodgers right off the bat. That makes no sense to me. And really, it's just a total disservice to Ryan Tannehill at this point. I think that you have the quarterback you've been looking for, although people are – it's like people don't want to embrace him because he can't overcome the fact that he's never had a good head coach at the NFL level, or if you really want to make a case of it, at the college level either. He has never had great coaching. He hasn't had anything resembling decent protection. They finally went out and got him some weapons, and I mean he's done great with them when he's upright and throwing the ball. But it's like people think he should overcome that. And I raised this point on Twitter earlier this week, and nobody argued with me, which I mean I guess validates the point of you. Look at any quarterback worth his salt in the NFL, a guy who's done good things, great things, whatever. He's had a head coach behind him. He's had a good head coach. And there's been a relationship there. Now, I think the closest anyone came to pointing anything out was like John Elway running off Dan Reeves in Denver. Fine, whatever. But John Elway didn't win Super Bowls with Dan Reeves. He lost them. He won Super Bowls with Mike Shanahan, who's notorious for being a quarterback guy, unless your name is, you know, Robert Griffin III. But, you know, you think Joe Montana wins without Bill Walsh? Hell no. Incredibly unlikely. You think that Tom Brady is who he is if he's not playing for Bill Belichick? I'm going to go with no. I think that's incredibly unlikely as well. Would Troy Aikman have been nearly as good anywhere else than when, I mean, he had Jimmy Johnson in his prime, playing behind, to this day, the best offensive line I've ever seen in my life, that early 90s Dallas Cowboys front. No.
You have Mike Emmitt Smith and Michael Irvin, too?
Yeah. And I mean, like, Alvin Harper, you know, that first go-around, he had Jay Novacek, who was an incredibly underrated player. You know, Daryl Johnston. You know, he had excellent players in there. Evan Smith was also the benefactor of that offensive line, by the way. But, I mean, Troy was an excellent player. He was the number one overall pick in 89 for a reason. He's a great player. You know, and it's sad that he wasn't able to play that long because of concussions and the beating he took, even though he had that offensive line. I mean, that was still a time where quarterbacks took an incredible amount of punishment. You know, they weren't nearly as protected as they are today. But, you know, like, you can just go down the list. You know, you think Brett Favre is good without Mike Holmgren? Probably not. I think that was a really important relationship in Brett Favre's maturation development as a quarterback, even though those two had a very quirky interesting, sometimes volatile relationship. That's okay. You don't have to be the best of friends, but there has to be that respect and understanding there. And, I mean, the Dolphins haven't put anything up there for us to respect. I mean, no, really no offense, but Joe Philbin was always a yes man. Gets in there, shows absolutely no leadership, was supposed to be a quarterback developer, was not that. They bring in Bill Lazor, who was supposedly a guy who could work with quarterbacks, and he was better. I think that he got more out of Tannehill at first than what we had with Mike Sherman, but it ran into a wall real quick. And it's about development. And how many times are you going to run this guy into a dead end and then have the gall to sit there and say he's not good enough? I'm sorry, that's BS. That is total crap. And you're being fed that by the local media. And if you want to go ahead and accept that, that's fine. But the point is that you're incredibly wrong. And you're also doing a disservice to the one player who has come in post-Marino and has done something worth getting worked up about, getting excited about. And it's like people are never going to accept Ryan Tannehill because he doesn't wear number 13. He doesn't have Marino on the nameplate on the back. And they just find things to nitpick about. Yeah, he missed that throw at the end of the game. There's a lot of quarterbacks who missed that throw at the end of the game. I've seen Tom Brady miss easier throws than that to lose games. I didn't recall anyone saying that, you know, he sucked. Go get somebody else. I mean, I'm sure there was some chowderhead idiot who said that. But, you know, on the whole, you know, you didn't have people thrown in the towel on him just for that. You know, far better quarterbacks make bigger mistakes in big games and didn't get killed for it. You can just go down the list. They've all been there. But, I mean, people are – it's like Miami is never going to fully embrace this guy. And, frankly, I'm starting to think it's because they're too stupid to embrace this guy. And it's always going to be like, no, you're making excuses for him. I had somebody say that on Twitter that I, you know, you can always find an excuse if you want. Right. By putting simple facts out there, I'm making an excuse for him. You go find me the quarterback who developed under the turmoil and chaos that has been this team's front office and coaching regime since he entered the league 3 years ago. You find me someone who's come up, you know, under a fraction of the turmoil that Tannehill has seen, that the turnover, the ineptitude, the sheer inability to coach up and maximize the output from your players. He hasn't had a guy like that. And unfortunately, I don't know if that guy is out there right now. Because, I mean, now we're in a position where, well, if he fails with the next guy, then we'll know he sucks. That's BS, too. You can't create this in a vacuum and say, like, okay, well, go ahead and develop chemistry with one of these guys. That's not how it works. That's why football is such a maddening game. That's why, you know, if it was that easy, you'd have more dynasties every 10 years than, you know, just the Patriots or the 90s Cowboys or, you know, 80s 49ers, 70s Steelers, so on and so forth, 60s Packers if you really want to get back there. But it's a tough thing. You can't just manufacture that. You got to have the right guy. And, you know, it takes a little bit of luck and a lot of foresight and clever thinking to realize that you've got the right people in-house. And the Dolphins, I don't know, could, you know, given their history, their hiring history, probably just serve up another piece of dog crap at head coach for this guy. And that's, I'm not talking about Dan Campbell, by the way. Dan Campbell, considering the circumstances, is, I think, done far better than I expected. And he deserves a lot of respect for that. But you can't just plug in ex-coach and say, like, okay, well, this will be better for Tannehill. We don't know that. I think that people are beating up on Mike McCoy out in San Diego because you're seeing that Phillip Rivers is really regressing bad, plays behind an awful offensive line. He's getting just absolutely walloped every weekend. And the defense isn't playing that well either. But I think that Mike McCoy was the ideal guy for Ryan Tannehill in 2012. And how the Dolphins didn't have the foresight to hire a guy who actually put together an offense or reconfigured an offense in which Tim Tebow won a playoff game and thought, if this guy can construct something successful for Tim Tebow, he can certainly do something with Ryan Tannehill. But again, like I said, you've got to have the right people making the right decisions to recognize things like that. It's not even a hindsight thing. The facts were out there when the coaching rumor hires and coaching rumors were going on in January 2012. So it's not hindsight. It's just, again and again, these guys make poor decisions. I like to think that they have it going on in the front office now. I think they finally have that solidarity. You don't have this ridiculous infighting like you had a couple of years ago where it was Don Aponte and Joe Philbin versus Jeff Ireland, and Philbin just chose the winning side because, like I said, he's a yes man. So you're telling me that with all of that going on, that Ryan Tannehill should be perfect? He should be outstanding? He should be taking this team to the playoffs every year? That's jacked up. That's just absolute, that's hot, wet garbage right there. And you'll see that turmoil has a really funny way of tearing things apart. Notice Russell Wilson looked awful at the beginning of this year when the Seahawks were sitting there and infighting and having an issue with each other and pointing fingers at each other during, you know, the Legion of Boom pointing fingers at each other when they blew coverage in that game against the Panthers. A lot of infighting. The offensive line, a lot of injuries, a lot of regression there. Russell Wilson was getting his ass beat earlier this season. That's the kind of stuff that happens. Notice that team gets it together. Suddenly, they're all best friends again. The offensive line playing much better. Russell Wilson throwing like 5 touchdowns a week now. Now, I'm not saying that it's all because of that, but it's sure conducive to that level of play. So, if you're going to sit here and beat up Ryan Tannehill at this level, then just let him, just trade him to a team that's not going to crap on him all the time. And I keep making this joke on Twitter, but I'm serious. The Dallas Cowboys, I think, would give up a significant amount for Ryan Tannehill. And I think he would just be lights out. Because, I mean, number one, he's going to go from playing behind one of the worst offensive lines in the league to playing behind the best. So there's that. Get him with, you know, whatever. Just give him ex-receiver Dez Bryant, pass a little running game. He'll be fine. And then I think he'd be successful there. And then Dolphins fans can sit around and bitch about how they can't find the next Dan Marino for another 15 years. Because that's what they want to do anyway. You want to run this guy out of town. You're getting closer and closer to that. To the fact where you can see his demeanor on the field is just kind of like the look of somebody who doesn't feel like he's at home. Every time that Ryan Tannehill plays and he makes a mistake, it looks like a guy who's on the road. And that's unfortunate. And, I mean, I don't just blame people like Omar for that, even though he is at fault for that. The fact that he has that much pull is so ridiculous, too. That sickens me unto itself. The local beat guy should not be able to rally together a sort of proto-football lynch mob out of fans. I have not seen that in any other beat coverage across the country except in Miami. And frankly, the fact that it's plausible sickens me. That should not happen, but it does. You got a lot of people believing that this isn't the guy. Cut him, get rid of him, start over. Go ahead, start the whole process over again. You might as well, because Mike Tannenbaum didn't draft him. Mike Tannenbaum was incredibly critical of Ryan Tannehill when the Dolphins made that pick. So go ahead and you can draw that parallel and say, well, he's not his guy. Maybe he goes ahead and moves on. He should. At this point, because if you're just going to hear and dump on this guy, then he deserves better. Send him elsewhere. Send him to Cleveland. Even Cleveland would receive him better than this. And that's ridiculous. Those guys are already planning on, you know, roasting Johnny Manziel alive. Send him to Houston. Houston needs a quarterback, preferably one who can stay healthy. You know, the Chargers are going to need a quarterback here pretty soon because Phillip Rivers is getting old. So, or, you know, when the Rams move out to L.A., give them a nice little travel party gift. Give them Ryan Tannehill. Let them hook you up with a couple of first-round picks for the trouble. Because in that offense, he'd kill, too. So the quarterback is the only thing holding that team back. But, I mean, they have skill position galore on that team, and their defense is ungodly. So, you know, whatever. But I mean, it's just, I read the comments, and I mean, I understand I can't get frustrated just reading what people say, but I mean, you guys are quickly becoming the majority, a lot of you, and I don't mean all of you. I know you have people listening to this are probably thinking like, you know, hey, why do you keep saying you? I didn't say anything. That's true. I'm not talking to you. I am, but I'm not. I just need you to realize that this guy is, you're quickly going to become the next guy to get run out of town. And unlike all the other lane quarterbacks that have been run out of town, this guy is worth his salt. So maybe think before you send him packing, because, you know, I remember that stretch from 2000 to 2012 was a long time. You know, we were starting Cleo Lemon at one point. We thought Trent Green was going to get us back to the promised land. Chad Pennington and his wet noodle arm, even though he's a great leader, very smart guy, you know, he was going to be the guy for us. Not the case. So unless you remember those days, or maybe you're a new fan and you don't, and you just think that this is just a minor hiccup, then I can't help you. But it's incredibly obnoxious, and it just goes to show really just the short memory and really the short attention span that a lot of people have. I'm actually going to take a call real quick. This is exciting. I don't recognize this area code. Caller, identify yourself.
You never remember me, man.
Actually, the reason I say that is whenever it's your area code that comes up and I don't recall it, I always figure it too. Sorry you were on hold for so long. I was sitting there ranting. Lewis,
it's all right. Keys, ladies and gentlemen.
So,
it's
anyway, yeah, angry. I guess I was angry Keith there, but honestly, I can't take it anymore. I've had enough. There's at some point some sense needs to be talking to some people. That I mean, I'm not saying
I put a QB embargo on my feed. That's why I put a QB embargo. I'm not doing it. I'm done. So you go ahead.
Oh, that's cool.
I'll just sit back. Spoon left Twitter because of this. I'm so sad.
That's pretty good. I like that. But, you know, at the same time, it's just so incredibly funny. Although you were a man of your word. You didn't say one thing during that entire rant, so good call, buddy. Anyway, Chris, what's up?
Nothing much. First off, I agree with everything you said. I
don't remember what I said. I blacked out, actually.
I would actually
get angry.
I would actually add one more team to that equation, and I would say either Buffalo or New York would give up a bounty for him. And
yeah, that's what these fans actually deserve at this point, is to, you know, go ahead and trade him in division and then let him pound you twice a year, because he's going to play behind a better offensive line up there. And he gets to throw it to Sammy Watkins and even Robert Woods. You know, whatever. Hand the ball to LeSean McCoy or the ghost of LeSean McCoy or whatever.
And his buddy Charles Clay.
Yeah, the reunion. The lack of, I mean, I'm not saying that Ryan Tannehill is an upper echelon quarterback right now. I'm not. Is he in the top third of the league? No, not right now. Not with the way, but he's had a bad year. He's had a bad year, though. It's because he's been set up to fail. That even though they went and got him all these weapons, everything else around him falls apart. You need more than just weapons. The one thing they've never been able to do is fortify the offensive line. It's been a big deal for him. And, I mean, I don't understand why people look at all the hits he's taken and think it's not a big deal. He's easily the most stacked quarterback. You know, he's in the David Carr range now. I hope people realize that. That, you know, when this guy came into the league, everyone, and he was that first year when he took a beating, everyone's like, oh, don't let him turn into David Carr. We're there, ladies and gentlemen. He's getting his ass beat like David Carr. So, I mean, what do you do? And at some point, you just turn around and say, he's not one of the best quarterbacks in the league. He's never close. But do you really think he's going to develop into that in spite of everything going on around him? Honestly, you have a better chance of winning the lottery than seeing that. That would be a miracle. That would be a Christmas miracle.
He is one of the toughest, though. I mean, he injured his throwing hand. He injured his throwing hand during that New York Giants game, and all you saw was him shaking his hand off. And what did he do next series? He comes back out. You know, it's ridiculous how, I mean, you want an Iron Man Award winner, there you go. But honestly, I think our next step, we need to get rid of that offensive line coach. For all the stuff we said about him when he came from Houston, no, I haven't seen it. You know, granted, he really hasn't been given the tools, but Pouncey's regressed. Albert's regressed. I mean, sure, Albert's injured every year, but at the same time, look at how he was in Kansas City. You know, James goes down, and all of a sudden our offensive line looks like, you know, it could be outrun by a Pee Wee League. You know, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. It's just a weekly embarrassment at this point, and I don't know when it's, I mean, when it's the end in sight, you know, when the season ends, I guess. But I asked Lewis this question. I'll ask you, too, because, as I mentioned, so I'm looking at this mock draft. I just pulled it up again. And we're picking eighth. And he's got him taking the Notre Dame left tackle, which, you know, I like that guy. I thought he would have been the number one left tackle selected last year. He needs to get stronger, which I feel like is a trend for offensive tackles we draft. But if you have that eighth pick and Jalen Smith is off the board, do you still go with a linebacker? Do you maybe take a corner?
At that point, I try to trade down.
Hargrave is available.
I still try to trade down. I really don't like Florida corners. I don't really like too many of the corners that come out of Florida, to be honest with you. I haven't really seen too many that have actually produced at the NFL level. So,
well,
I mean,
right
pretty
now,
much...
The only guy who's doing it is, on the whole, Joe Hayden. And then, you know, Janoris Jenkins shows up every so often, but I don't want to draft Janoris Jenkins at eighth overall, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, if that's the case, I go ahead and I try to trade down.
Is Miles Jack on the board?
I don't like Miles Jack for us. Because every year in the first round, it seems we have to draft somebody that's just coming off of an injury. And then he spends half the year on the bench and everybody complains about, oh, well, he should be playing, blah, blah, blah. Miami sucks again. They draft sucks and blah, blah, blah. And it's just every single year that we've drafted somebody. Look at Deion Jordan. Look at
Jordan isn't bad because he was injured. Jordan's bad because he's a head case.
Yeah, but part of his head case is because he came in and – you know, he was injured, and then he was told he had to get stronger, and then he couldn't get off the bench, and, you know.
See, I would disagree with you there, because I don't think his having to bulk up had anything to do with his injury. That was more along the lines of Philbin and Co. being stupid and telling him, well, guess what, we don't want you to be an outside linebacker, we want you to be a defensive end, you're too skinny to be a defensive end, so get beefier, will ya? Thanks.
Yeah, I'm not saying that was a product of his injury. I'm saying that's a part of the problem with him being a head case. Coming in, he's a linebacker. He's a defensive end in Oregon, which means, of course, he's a linebacker in the NFL. But, you know, just the games that they played with him, I'd be a head case too. I mean, look at the people that just went crazy because of the coaching regime that we had in place. I liked Philbin for who he was. It's like everybody else, Sherman, Mr. 8 yards in a cloud of dust on the defensive, and, you know, it just, it's enough to drive a person insane. But at the same time, if we have the 8th overall pick and my guy is off the board and Tunsil's off the board, and
is that who your guy is? I was just going to ask, who is your guy?
Well, you've already, I talk about him every week.
For everyone who's listening.
Yeah. You just said his name. Jalen Smith.
Oh, Jalen Smith, yeah.
Yeah, that's my guy. That's the only guy that I've projected us to take in the first round. I've been talking him up all season long. Now, I wouldn't mind drafting... Now, I wouldn't mind drafting McKenzie after watching some of his tape, but again, I'm not really too thrilled with the concept. But, I mean, if Jalen Smith's off the board, then we might as well go ahead and trade Wake and grab his Ogbo. Because, or trade down. Because that's really the only two options that I see here that is going to help us in the first round. That's pretty much slated in that spot.
Well,
I would have said go ahead and draft Nadichki, but he went ahead and lost his mind this week, falling off a second floor and then getting arrested for marijuana.
that whole story is ridiculous, too.
Yeah. But then again, we should just go ahead and draft him anyways, because that's not really the same thing that happened with Dan Marino, but apparently Dan Marino was a cokehead, and look at how he turned out.
Yeah, I like that whole rumor. The best thing about that was that the reason the Raiders didn't draft him, they didn't even have him on their draft board because of that. The Raiders. Like, I mean, they're the team that – they're like the second-chance program in the NFL more often than not. So, you know, whatever. Yeah, there are some really sobering things to think about when you're looking at this this mock draft. Number one is the fact that the Ravens are picking 4th. You just don't ever see that. So, I mean, that's – and he's got him taking Jalen Ramsey, who's going to probably end up being the number one corner coming out of here, even though I think he projects better as a safety. I know that a couple of people have come out and said that. I'm definitely a person who agrees with that. Jared Goff going 5th to the 49ers. I hate that team. Tunsil, he's got going to the Lions. That's like their new receiver. They just take an offensive tackle every year. Although, if Matthew Stafford can stay, you know, continue to play this well, I mean, there's some incentive in taking an offensive lineman. And then he's got us with Stanley Hargraves to Jacksonville, Treadwell to St. Louis, another receiver for those guys. You see, that's how loaded that team is, theoretically. I mean, they just continue taking the same position, even though they, I mean, they're fine everywhere else. It's just that their quarterback play is garbage.
Where's Jack end up, just because I'm curious?
Where to?
Jack.
Oh, Miles? He's got going to Atlanta at 14.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, I like him. I like him a lot, especially because I think he can play anywhere as a linebacker. I don't think he's tied to one position. So, which, I mean, it's cool. Although, the guy I draft, especially at that spot, I would like to make a middle linebacker. I understand that you're not supposed to take those guys that high. I don't care. I think that we need a leader on defense behind Ndamukong Suh, since according to him, this is his defense. So, whatever.
That doesn't exactly sound like something an assassin, a hired assassin, would say. That sounds like somebody. That sounds like a leader who's frustrated with his followers.
What's that?
Him, Sue, saying that this is his defense, and a lot. Even if the words used were inaccurate, it's pretty clear at this point that Sue is tired of playing with these guys and having to be the only guy, and then hearing Gruden on ESPN being stupid, and he takes a one play break to catch his breath, and Gruden just so happens to see him marching off the field and says that Sue's not a leader and Sue needs to do more. It's like, are you even watching the game, Mr. John Gruden? So I remember somebody, and the next person who says that John Gruden should be the next head coach of the Miami Dolphins needs to get slapped upside the head and then, like, get his head chopped off and then slap it again.
I haven't seen that yet. Has anyone said that on Twitter?
It happened before the Monday night game. Oh, I don't know if it's happened since, but, like, good Lord, Gruden was brutal. Like, he's blaming everybody. I take it back, actually. He only seemed to blame Sue. Like, he has his personal vendetta against Ndamukong Suh. And I cannot, for the life of me, figure out why he has such an issue with this guy. And, of course, then there was the, who was it that he said that Jordan Phillips?
Oh, Phillips, he wanted ejected.
He said he was ejected. Like, okay, yes, it was a cheap shot, but ejected? Come on. There's been a lot worse.
I agree with you. I love the way John Gruden talks. Like, Tim Tebow, that guy's a quarterback, man. You're talking about 250 pounds of concrete dynamite under center. What an idiot.
I love the faux Gruden account. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Gruden.
I haven't looked at that one as of late. But, I mean, the problem is that this should have a sort of game where it's like, did he actually say this or was this fabricated by this account? I would be shocked if somebody could ace that test. Because the stuff that they print on that account is so close to the kind of stuff that he says during games.
The same thing that they're doing with Sue is the same thing they're doing with Ryan Tannehill, and it's because he's the $100 million man of the Miami Dolphins. So obviously, if he's making $100 million, he should be the guy to do it all, because apparently he did it all in Detroit, although he did have a supporting cast. I mean, it wasn't just him. But
there was a supporting cast for a while, then Wake got hurt and everything went to crap.
And then our only decent outside linebacker, he's been playing hurt. Misi, he's had his annual injury. I can't wait for that guy to leave. Then, of course, our secondary, they disappear. Okay, here's something interesting. Going back to the draft, I do that on the clock premium thing. If the Giants offer you a first, second, and third, and they're picking 18, would you take it?
Oh, wow. The jump from 8 to 18, huh?
Yep. But they offer you second, and third round pick.
I mean, depending who's there, I would heavily consider that. Who do they want so bad? Do they want a defensive player? A corner, perhaps?
Probably. I wouldn't think that if they move up to number 9 for a first, second, and third, they're probably getting them a Jalen Smith. That's probably who their guy's going to be at number 9.
If we're in that position, I'd rather take Jalen Smith than. But, I mean, that's a nice haul.
Either they want a defensive player or they want an offensive lineman.
I think Flowers. I mean, I like Eric Flowers. I think he's coming under him pretty good. I like Pugh on the other side. I like Richburg inside. But I mean, they're at a point there in Eli Manning's career where they can't really let him take that kind of beating. They just can't. So I don't know.
Because the only real inside linebacker they have with a first round grade is Reggie Ragland.
Yeah, I was going to say Ragland.
But, I mean,
yeah,
for that, I'd rather take Beckwith in the second.
Yeah. A lot of options. So many options.
Or well, even Kinchel's brothers in the third.
Yeah. I mean, if you like the depth in this draft, and then I mean, then that's obviously a deal you'd make to move down to 18, especially because as of right now, you could probably get Racklin there. That will likely change over the next couple of months, but for right now, I mean, that's a deal I'd make. So we're coming up on the end of the show, actually, the slow night, and I'm tired, so we're gonna go ahead and hold it up over the next couple of minutes. Anything
today,
you guys want? What's that?
You went all out today.
Yeah, it was the 100% effort, as opposed to me usually just sitting here and not paying attention. We call that to Kevin. I was actually hoping that Kevin was going to call in tonight. He didn't. So, anything you guys want to touch before we go ahead and
Last question. What positions do you avoid in the first round of the draft next year?
What position do you want?
Any position.
Well, I think that, I mean, I hate to say it, offensive tackle needs to be considered at least. I know we've had the Albert discussion, but it's a value thing. I mean, if you're picking that high, you have to consider it, especially because all the really good offensive tackles are going to be gone by, like, the 15th pick this year. Yeah, there's only four of them. After watching that game the other night, I would be a fool to not say cornerback.
I would. There's so many holes, so many places. Corner, linebacker,
yeah.
Running back, probably, because I don't think Lamar Miller is going to be sticking around. He's going to go somewhere who will actually give him the stupid football. Tight end is a
yeah,
big issue. Jordan Cameron is not panning out. So, and Deion Sims is regressing. So, as sad as it seems, offensive tackle is really not one of my bigger concerns, because I just look everywhere else and I'm like, oh my God, this is going to take 5 years to fix at least. And that's assuming Tannenbaum doesn't get the boot earlier. And that's assuming Tannenbaum doesn't get the boot earlier, because as we all know, Dolphins fans have no patience. None. Absolutely
right.
None. I keep having discussions with this one person who I keep telling over and over, hey dude, this is not Tannenbaum's. This isn't Tannenbaum's team. All Tannenbaum did was find a way to get Ndamukong Suh here and Jordan Phillips. Other than that, that's the only two things I know for sure that was Tannenbaum. Everything else has been the Philbin Hickey leftovers. Tannenbaum's real reign starts next year. Are you willing to give him, and he told me, okay, fine, I'll give him 1 year. You want him to fix it in 1 year? Are you crazy? Like, he's not going to fix anything in 1 year. Nobody can fix this in 1 year. It's going to take at least a couple of years before they're even close to competitive.
That's the truth.
This year should be all about just scrapping all of them badass contracts. The ones that we can get rid of. Grimes, him and what's-his-face's love interest should be gone.
Yeah.
Cameron, gone. Jennings, gone. All of them, just gone. If they make over $10 million a year and their name is not Tannehill, they should be gone.
Who's the love interest? Anyway. Who are you talking about?
I don't even want... I call him the Predator. But Miko Grimes' love interest.
We all know.
Okay, I got you. I know what's happening now. I didn't hear you say his name.
And if we're lucky, they will take him with them.
Yeah, that'd be nice to their next destination when he signs with them as a free agent. I mean, here's the biggest disservice this fan base and Omar have done to this team is that people, I feel like some people, when Brent Grimes fails, they're like, see, I mean, I don't want to see anyone on this team fail, but when Brent Grimes falls on his face, you can tell it gives a certain amount of people satisfaction because of how propped up he's been by the Predator. All right, you actually called him a different name for a while. It was something Predator, wasn't it?
Wasn't it the Crud Itter or something like that?
No, it was...
began with a C.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if it was even fit for radio anymore. I don't remember.
I mean, probably not, but... Hey, so, no, I mean, so you see Brent Grimes. I saw people after the game, everyone was calling him Burnt Grimes. I mean, I thought that was kind of clever. especially because, you know, Brent.
I mean, it is the truth. I mean, it feels like he calls out everybody except Brent, and it's pretty obvious why he doesn't. It really is. Like, he even joked about it. Are y'all really obsessed with Miko that much? And the answer to that is yes, because we know that she's the reason you keep your mouth shut.
Does she even go to the games anymore? Does she have her, you know,
yeah,
arrested?
She goes to the games. They called off the case. So apparently the police are at fault here instead of her. So, I mean, whatever. It's just a cool thing now to pick on the police.
Yeah, hopefully all three of them, when they hit the road, they all pile into the same car and, you know, GTFO, if you will. Because, I mean, that's one less medic the team needs. And I'm sure Tannenbaum conscious of that.
Because
they
need to take their talents to Seattle, because I would love to see Mr. Predator and their coach, Pete Carroll, just get into it a couple of times. I guarantee you that guy would quit writing about football.
Yeah, Omar's not leaving Miami. He loves the weather too much.
That's code for nobody will.
His words, not mine.
I mean, well, that's fine. I mean, I'm not going to turn this into a mudslinging thing, but I think that guy hurts the team and often his fans more than anything. So that's all I've got to say about it. All right, we're going to go ahead.
Bottom
and we're going to.
If we're going to go back to the Dolphins topic before the show's over, I guess what we really need to do here is just bottom line. Step number one, top head coach, find a guy who's going to take – actually, I take it back. Not a top head coach, because that would mean Sean Payton, and I don't want him. A head coach who fits what it is the Dolphins need to do. And right now what they need to do is they need to find people who can make the best – who can get the best out of every individual player. And just for me, that would be Hugh Jackson, because I look at what he did in Oakland with an even worse roster than what's here, and if he can take that roster to 8-8, he should be able to take this kind of a roster, as even with as many holes as it has, it's more talented than what he had in Oakland. He should be able to take that a team like this to 10-6, and that's before an off season of fixing things.
I agree with you.
I still want James Franklin. He fits our Rooney Rule bill, and he'll pretty much bring like half of Penn State's coaching staff with him, and I'm really interested to see what Joe Moorhead could do, their offensive coordinator, with Ryan Tannehill.
Yeah. As long as you get the right
Joe Moorhead. Joe Moorhead has done some great things with horrible teams on the offensive side of the football.
Yeah, I've been impressed with what he's done. And I think that is a good stopping point, because I need to go to sleep. I can barely stay awake at this point. So for my guests, Lewis and Chris, always good to hear from them. We'll go ahead and do this again next Wednesday. I promise to make the show less depressing than it was tonight. I just you know, this is one of those clearing the air type podcasts for us. So for my good friend, thanks for tuning in, and we'll talk to you guys next Wednesday. Have a great week. Good night.
See you later. Good night. Good night.